Chapter 10. A hand on his shoulder shook Corey awake. He came up out of sleep, ready to fight, his hands gripping the rifle as he looked around, wildly for the enemy.
"Hold on there, son," Abner Strayhorn said.
The sharp words penetrated the fog in Corey's brain, and he realized it was his friend kneeling beside him, not some Yankee out to cut his throat. His heart still pounding, Corey sat up and shuddered. He looked at Abner. "Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," Abner replied with a grin. "Not much more than a scratch and all that fighting yesterday."
His expression became more serious.
"Looks like you're hurt, though."
He gestured toward Corey's leg. Corey looked down at his calf and saw the dark stain that dried blood had left on his trousers. He tried to pull up the leg of the garment and winced in pain as it wouldn't come up. He realized, to his horror, that his calf was swollen to almost twice its normal size. Fear made his heart race again. "Oh, my God," he said, his voice shaking. "They'll have to cut it off. The surgeons will have to cut it off." Abner gripped his shoulder, his fingers pressed down hard.
"Hold on," he said. "Ain't nobody cutting off nothing till I've had a look at this here leg."
He took his bayonet off his rifle and used it to slice through the fabric of Corey's trousers. When Abner had laid bare the wounded calf, Corey gasped at how inflamed the flesh was around the black, ugly wound. He wanted to cry, and he felt himself on the verge of panic. He knew what the butchers in the field hospitals would do to him if they got hold of him while he was in this condition. Out would come the bone saw, and orderlies would hold him down while the surgeons hacked off his leg at the knee. If he was lucky, he would get some laudanum to help ease the pain. He might not be that fortunate. He might have to stand the agony without anything to help him. And then, again, only if fate smiled on him, he would live to be a cripple. Chances were, though, that the festering would still kill him. Abner let out a low whistle.
"One of them damn Yanks got you good. We'll have to tend to that."
"You can't. There's nothing we..." Corey was too horror-stricken to go on.
"There's always something you can do. Sometimes it don't work out, but you can always try."
Abner stared solemnly at him.
"You want me to fetch a surgeon, or would you rather I do what I can?"
How can you... What can you do?" The grin came back fleetingly on Abner's face.
"You might not guess it to look at me, but I come from a family with a sawbones or two in it. My grandpappy was a doctor, and so was his brother. I listened to them old-timers a lot when I was just a pup, so I know a thing or two about tending to ailments."
Abner turned and delved into his pack.
"I got something in here I've been saving, and..."
He brought out a small silver flask. Corey's eyes widened.
Is that whiskey?"
he asked in a choked voice. He thought that over the years he had lost his craving for the stuff, but now it came back as strong as ever.
"Yeah, but you ain't going to drink it. Here, hang on to it for a second."
Abner thrust the flask into Corey's hands. Then, before Corey could ask him what he was about to do next, Abner slid his knife from its sheath on his hip and slashed the flesh of Corey's calf, cutting through the original wound. Corey screamed as his head jerked back, the cord standing out on his neck. Agony flared through his leg and into the rest of his body. His back arched off the ground. A horrible stink assaulted his nostrils, and when he regained his senses enough to look down at his calf, he saw thick clots of green-gray pus welling from the wound, along with a steady stream of blood.
"What the hell?"
An officer had come up behind Abner.
"Private, what are you doing to that man?"
"Cleaning out this wound, sir," Abner said. "It don't look or smell very pretty, but it's the best way."
"Damn it, you're not a surgeon. Get him to a field hospital right now."
"He says he don't want to go, Captain."
"I don't care what he says."
Abner ignored the captain and grabbed Corey's leg, squeezing the calf so that more blood flowed from the wound. Corey gritted his teeth this time and held back the scream that wanted to come from his lips. Oddly enough, when Abner stopped putting pressure on his leg, he thought it felt a little better.
"Give me that whiskey."
Abner took the flask and shook it next to his ear. From the sound, the flask was about half full. He pulled the cork from its neck with his teeth and emptied the amber liquid over the raw opening in Corey's leg. Corey couldn't hold back the scream this time. His leg felt like it was on fire. But gradually the pain began to subside. Breathing hard from the effort, he propped himself up on his elbows and looked at his leg. The swelling had gone down some.
"Private, you disobeyed a direct order."
Corey interrupted the captain this time. "Captain, I asked Private Strayhorn to tend to my leg. He comes from a family of doctors." That was stretching the truth a little, but not much.
"I don't care. Such insubordination must be dealt with."
The officer hesitated, then went on.
I order both of you to the rear. You'll help man the fortifications around Atlanta."
"Captain, the way I heard it, that's where the whole blamed army's going anyway,"
Abner said.
"That doesn't matter," the captain snapped. "That's the punishment I've decided upon, and it will be enforced."
"Yes, sir. We'll be getting ourselves on into Atlanta as soon as I tap this here leg."
The captain clapped a hand on Abner's shoulder for a second.
"See to it, Private. Carry on."
"Ain't no such thing as clean bandages around here, so we'll do the best we can," Abner said after the officer had left. "I can cut some strips off my undershirt and..."
"Use mine," Corey suggested. "It's cleaner."
Abner grinned. "Is that so? Well, it's your leg, so I reckon it's up to you what we use to bind it up."
10 minutes later, with strips of cloth bound tightly around Corey's leg to slow the bleeding and protect the wound, Abner helped him to his feet. Corey used his rifle as a crutch, and Abner took hold of his arm so to steady him as they started down the road to Atlanta, with the thousands of other Confederate troops that were pulling back into the fortified city.
"How'd you find me, anyway?" Corey asked through clenched teeth against the pain.
"It wasn't hard. Figured I'd find you sleeping under a tree, lazy fellow like you, and sure enough, there you were."
"Thanks, Abner."
"Don't thank me yet. I don't know if I did a damn bit of good for you."
"You didn't take me to the hospital. That would have been the end of me for sure."
"Might have been quicker that way," Abner muttered.
Corey limped along and pretended not to hear him. It was Vicksburg all over again, Corey thought countless times over the next few weeks. The Yankees menaced Atlanta on the north, west, and east, blocking the railroads that came in from those directions. They burned trestles and ties and pulled up the rails, heating them in bonfires so they could be twisted into unusable shapes known as Sherman's hairpins. Only the Macon and Western Railroad to the south was still open, and Sherman wanted to cut it as well. He sent some units circling in that direction, obviously intent on destroying the city's one remaining source of supplies, forcing Hood to send 4 divisions to stop the maneuver. The Confederates clashed with the Federals near Ezra Church, west of the city, in sharp, bloody fighting that resulted in the loss of 5,000 more Southerners. Hood was spending his human currency hand over fist, but this time, at least, he partially succeeded in blocking Sherman's advance on the Macon and Western. A second circling maneuver by Sherman was headed off with a smaller battle near Utoy Creek. Desperation gripped Atlanta, no doubt about that, but for now the city was holding its own. Not without paying a price, however. For the past year, slaves and soldiers had been erecting a line of solid defenses around the city, a seemingly impenetrable barrier of earthworks and artillery batteries, trenches and redoubts, walls of felled trees and spiked logs. The only problem was that in places these fortifications were within a mile of downtown Atlanta, and nowhere were they out of range of the Federal artillery. The big guns pounded the city day and night. Shells fell whistling from the sky to wreak havoc and destruction. The civilians remaining in the city, of whom there were considerably more than Corey had thought at first, learned to hurry out of their houses at the first signs of a renewed bombardment and seek shelter in backyard bomb-proofs, homemade shelters consisting of pits covered by roofs of planks and dirt. These were not actually bomb-proof. A shell falling directly on one of them usually destroyed it and killed the occupants. But by and large, they provided a considerable amount of shelter from the storm of fire cast down from the heavens by the Yankees.